then. It took B.B. Roth and his children, that's what he called them, only 45 minutes to go over the Buick from stem to stern, the young people dusting and brushing and snapping pictures, B.B. with a clipboard walking around and sometimes pointing wordlessly at something with his ballpoint pen. About 20 minutes into it, Orv Garrett came out with Mr. Dillon. The dog was on his leash, which was a rarity around the barracks. Sandy walked over to them. The dog wasn't howling, had quit trembling, and was sitting with his brush of tail curled neatly over his paws, but his dark brown eyes were fixed on the Buick and never moved. From deep in his chest, almost too low to hear, came a steady growl like the rumble of a powerful motor.
"For Christ's sake, Orvy, take him back inside," Sandy Dearborn said. "Okay, I just thought he might be over it by now."
He paused, then said, "I've heard bloodhounds act that way sometimes when they found a body. I know there's no body, but do you think someone might have died in there?"
"Not that we know of."
Sandy was watching Tony Shandings come out of the barrack side door and amble over to B.B. Roth. Ennis was with him. Kurt Wilcox was out on patrol again, much against his wishes. Sandy doubted that even pretty girls would be able to talk him into giving them warnings instead of tickets that afternoon. Kurt wanted to be at the barracks, watching B.B. and his crew at work, not out on the road. If he couldn't be, lawbreakers in western Pennsylvania would pay. Mr. Dillon opened his mouth and let loose a long, low whine, as if something in him hurt. Sandy supposed something did. Orville took him inside. 5 minutes later, Sandy himself was rolling again, along with Steve Devo, to the scene of a two-car collision out on Highway 6. B.B. Roth made his report to Tony and Ennis as the members of his crew, there were three of them, sat at a picnic table in the shade of Shed B, eating sandwiches and drinking the iced tea Matt Babicki had run out to them.
"I appreciate you taking the time to do this," Tony said.
"Your appreciation is appreciated," B.B. said. "And I hope it ends there. I don't want to submit any paperwork on this one, Tony. No one would ever trust me again."
He looked at his crew and clapped his hands like Miss Francis on Ding Dong School.
"Do we want paperwork on this job, children?"
One of the children who helped that day was appointed Pennsylvania's chief medical examiner in 1993. They looked at him, two young men and a young woman of extraordinary beauty. Their sandwiches were raised, their brows creased. None of them was sure what response was required.
"No, B.B.," he prompted them.
"No, B.B.," they chorused dutifully.
"No what?" B.B. asked.
"No paperwork," said young man number one.
"No file copies," said young man number two.
"No duplicate or triplicate," said the young woman of extraordinary beauty. "Not even any singlicate."
"Good," he said. "And with whom are we going to discuss this, Kinder?"
This time they needed no prompting.
"No one, B.B.,"
"Exactly,"
B.B. agreed.
"I'm proud of you."
"Gotta be a joke anyway," said one of the young men. "Someone's tricking on you, Sarge."
"I'm keeping that possibility in mind," Tony said, wondering what any of them would have thought if they had seen Mr. Dillon howling and hunching forward like a crippled thing. Mr. D hadn't been tricking on nobody.